Manx Radio Sport, driven by Rex Motor Company. Find your dream car by visiting rexmotorcompany.in today, or find us on Facebook.
Welcome and good evening to our listeners on Manx Radio AM 1368. This is Saturday Sport Classified. I'm Rob Pritchard, taking you through the events of today. We have Manx football, the Manx rally, the Manx Rams in action in netball, and two massive finals in Manx rugby to go through today. Well, first off, we're going to turn to motorsport and to the Manx rally. Well, as we found out last night, there was drama in the Manx rally before things even began, as favourite Jason Pritchard was ruled out of the competition after bringing an engine pulley on his Ford Focus during the shakedown session on Friday morning. Since then, it's been a question of who can dominate in the rally's return after 2 years away. Roskill Motorsport have been leading the way over the last day or so through Blackpool-based driver Neil Roskill and co-driver Andrew Roughead. They've been stretching their advantage at the front throughout the final stages today, but there's been a real battle as to who will occupy the places behind them. Chris Boyd has been keeping us up to date throughout the day on Manx Radio, and hopefully we can cross to him now. Chris, what's the situation now? Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Rob. Yeah, we're in a gloriously sunny still TT grandstand, and we're just awaiting the podium presentations. The leading rider crews are, in fact, just been waiting to be called to have the podium and maybe a bit of champagne, and it will be very well deserved for Neil Roskill and his co-driver here. As we said, they've won this rally by 4 minutes and 37.8 seconds is the final winning margin. 4 minutes, 37.8. That's seriously impressive over the huge battle for second, which we'll come to in a little bit. We spoke to Neil at the end of the final stage, and there's a little bit of emotion there. He's had a little bit of time to collect his thoughts now, and a win on a Manx rally is something a bit special, isn't it, Neil?
Very special. When you look at all the people who've won it before, some great names down there, be able to come here and win it today is, I'm absolutely over the moon. Couldn't think of anything nicer. It's been fantastic.
And to come here, you came here thinking you'd be up against Jason Pritchard and Simon Bowen, really. Simon fell by the wayside early last night, as Rob said. Jason didn't even make the start. And from then, really, you've been building that lead ever since. And we've been speaking through the rally. It's about you managing, and it's a new situation for you because you've only been in rallying 2 or 3 years. Trying to manage a lead must be something you've not had to do that many times.
No, it's not happened so much. But like I say, we just had to get our heads together this morning and say, right, OK, Simon's out of it and Jason's not here, and just go with what we can and just try. We tried to go a bit too steady on the first two stages this morning. It just didn't work, so we put the pace in a bit more after that. Got the pace right and just really just conserved our lead and just built on it, really. And got to the point that we just wanted to fetch the car home in one piece because we wanted to win the rally, and that's what it's about.
And it's only your second time here, yeah. And you've been doing lots of championships. You did the Asphalt Championship last year. You did the MN Circuit Championship over the winter. This isn't a round of any championship. What is it that brought you back to the Isle of Man for the Manx Rally?
It's the Manx Rally. It's known throughout the world, isn't it? And to me, it's like it's one of the big ones. It's like the Mull Rally. Manx Rally, Donegal, they're the top names of the top rallies that are out there. And it's really something that appealed to me. Even though we've got a rally in 2 weeks over at the Jim Clark, it was I want to go over to Manx because I think it's lovely place. It's only the second time I've been here, and it's the roads are brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
And your name is going to go on that trophy alongside some fairly famous names.
Yeah.
Tony Pond, Verdi Fisher, yeah. Kenny McKinstry.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Neil Roskill. I can't believe it, yeah.
And I know we mentioned at the stop line there'll be a little bit of emotion involved, and the rallying family know the story, but could just explain for Manx Radio the situation of why you're rallying.
I'm doing it in memory of my son. I lost my son just after the Polkas. We came to the Polka Stars, and then ended up, after that, getting COVID. We lost him in November. It's actually 6 months to the day today that we lost him. So, you know, I do it in memory of Nathan. And since just before we lost him and after, we've won a few rallies. So I went, right, we'll carry on. And it's in memory from here on out.
And he was your biggest fan, wasn't he? He was loving following you rallying.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Yeah, he absolutely loved me rallying and doing well. And yeah, so that's what we do now, is we do it for Nathan. Well, that's why his name's on the car.
Absolutely. You've done him absolutely proud today, and congratulations again.
All right, thank you very much. And thank you very much for all the support. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
We will grab a quick word on Andrew. Normally quite reticent, but we're going to get a word because we always speak to the winning co-driver as well. What's it like barking these pace notes down through Ingebrek and the Balkans?
Yeah, it's been quite busy this weekend, but it's been worth it in the end.
Have you got any moments, really?
No, nothing. He's never put a foot wrong all weekend. We drove, managed the rally quite well, and a very mature drive.
And he did say at one point this afternoon you were pushing him on.
I've tried to. Yeah.
4 minutes and you were pushing him on?
Yep. got to at some point.
It's the first Manx rally win for you as well.
It is, yeah.
So that's something to know as well, because there's lots of famous co-drivers on that trophy as well as drivers.
Yeah, very proud.
Congratulations, and party on tonight. There we go. So let's get to that story for second place then, which developed into a right battle between Rory and Paul McCann and then George Collister in Postle Place. Rory and Paul had 37 seconds built up after Little London this afternoon, and then they started encountering gearbox troubles. It was jumping out of first and second gear, the Honda Civic, and it just meant that George Collister was able to just eke back stage by stage by stage. They went into the final stage 4 seconds apart. Rory and Paul had a 4 second advantage over George. With all the chicanes that need first and second gear in Faulty Wheel, it meant that George was just able to do enough to clinch the position by 2.8 seconds. And you've had time to think about it a little bit now, just how hard that push was on Faulty Wheel, George.
It was a very big push on Faulty Wheel to get up there. I was chatting with a couple of the guys before, and said, no, we won't push too much up there. If Rory encounters problems, it'll come our way. But once we left the start line, I come around the first bail, that was it. Yeah, my head was in gear. I was taking chances, and as hard as we could get the car to go up the hill.
And you were the first to give commiserations to Rory as well.
Yeah. Rory and Paul are great friends of ours. And so to finish second, finish third in his carries. Yeah, it's not right to steal it right at the end, but to finish first, you must finish.
Yeah. And a 30-year-old car comes second to a brand spanking new latest specification R5. That's not a bad result.
No, my car's worth about the same amount as the clutch in the car in front of me. So I'm quite happy with the result in the old Beamer here.
Well done. Congratulations. There we go. So we'll recap the results then, Rob. The winners, Neil Roskell and Andrew Roughead of the 2022 Manx Rally. Total time of 1 hour, 35 minutes, 52 seconds, giving them a 4 minute, 37.8 second winning margin over George Collister and Ian Postlethwaite in the BMW. Rory and Paul McCann then just 2.8 seconds back on that in a Honda Civic. Stuart Morrison from Scotland with Kerry McGilvery, they finished fourth in the end with Gary Leach just dropping down. In fact, he's also dropped down behind Richard Fishley in a Ford Escort Mark II as well. So Morrison fourth, Fishley fifth, and then Gary Leach and Sarah Jane Cool, his niece, they finish in sixth place, which is still a fantastic result for Gary. He lost the rear brakes on the last couple of stages and has dropped down from fourth to sixth, but sixth is still a cracking result. Seventh for visitors Chris Simmons in a Darien. He's done very well this weekend. Eighth, Ben Crump in a Ford Escort. Then another local in ninth, Andrew Dudgeon, who's former Manx Grand Prix winner. Dudge back in the rallying game again now with Shannon Bryson in a Honda Civic. They finished in ninth. That is only a 1600 Honda Civic as opposed to Rory McCann's 1800, so giving away a fair bit of power, but he's got a top 10 position. Other leading locals, Tim Cole and Dave Sutcliffe in their BMW 13th, Chris Hayes and Rick Sutcliffe in their BMW 16th, Martin Freestone and James Freestone in a Ford Escort. They get a top 20, and there are various other locals as we head down the list. It has been non-stop drama, this Manx Rally, since yesterday lunchtime, really, since the shakedown and the news about Jason Pritchard emerged, Rob. And it's just gone on from there. There seems to have been drama on every single stage. We'll get a breather tonight and recap it all. Just take stock of what's taken place this weekend. But for Neil Roskell, it is a fantastic win. And only his second visit to the island, that takes some doing. And there we are. That wraps up the Manx Rally of 2022, Rob.
Well, thanks, Chris. We'll keep you for just a moment. I know you've been all over the island this weekend following all the drama. Congratulations to Neil and Andrew on that result, a commanding victory from them. But just to see the Manx Rally, from your perspective personally, to see the Manx Rally come back after 2 years and have such drama and excitement throughout these 2 days, how's it been for you to watch and soak in the atmosphere?
It's fantastic. In terms of storylines, we thought when Jason went out yesterday lunchtime, it was like, ooh, right, that has actually blown the thing wide open now, because now we could get any one of four or five winners. And that looked like happening to start with last night, because we had Neil fastest on the first stage, then Simon Bone was fastest on the second stage, then Neil took the lead again on the third stage. You got three lead changes in three stages, and then Simon Bone blew the engine up down near Erie on his fourth Fiesta last night. Steve Orman-Smith, our top local, who we were expecting big things off as well, he crashed in that same stage last night, but all okay, unhurt. But just to have the stories then start to develop, and suddenly everybody's back in the swing of it, all the marshals were out there, all the timekeepers, it's a cast of hundreds that run this event, timekeepers, marshals, radios, rescue crews, communications crews. There are just so many people involved. It's all right. In in running an event of this stature and size with all these closed road stages, especially when they've taken the event to FIA specification this year. They've moved it to an international status event, running under FIA regulations rather than the Motorsport UK regulations, which has made quite a dramatic effect on what's happened with the rally. For instance, crews weren't allowed to work on the cars overnight last night, whereas they might normally, if they hit trouble on the first night, they could work on it all night. Under FIA regulations, you're not allowed to do that. The cars have to be put into what's called parc fermé, a sealed location. You can't touch them. So there's been all sorts of impacts on the competitors and all sorts of impacts on the organisers. But the event has run in brilliant weather with brilliant storylines. And at the end of it, we have a fantastic winner in Neil Roscoe and a great story to go with it.
Absolutely. And one final question before we let you go and enjoy a well-deserved break over the rest of the weekend. Word gets around about these events, of course, to hear about all the drama and excitement of this rally. Word will surely get around. Do you think it could entice even more to come over next time around?
Well, I mean, Manx rallying within rallying circles has a certain folklore, and that's why we love it so much. That's why we put so much coverage into these kind of events, because Manx Rally as a brand, if you like, is huge within rallying circles. Everybody knows the Manx Rally. When you speak to anybody about the British Rally Championship, they talk about the Manx Rally. It inevitably comes round. It's not in the championship this year, but at some point down the line, we'd love to get the British Rally Championship back here and get all of the top drivers from around the UK here, the real top drivers. There's then the Asphalt Championship below that, that has its own series of very, very top drivers. Neil Roscoe is one of those. And so we'd love to maybe get that back next year. But there's lots for the organisers to think on as the months go on. It never stops moving, and you never know where we'll end up in 12 months' time. We'll all be back. We'll be back before that at the end of the year with another single day, potentially closed road rally in October. But we'll be back this time next year, hopefully, with the Manx Rally 2023.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for all your comprehensive reports over the last couple of days, and roll on next year, I say. Chris, a very good weekend to you.
And to you, Rob.
Chris Boyd there with the final reports on the Manx Rally. Once again, a congratulations to Neil Roscoe and Andrew Roughead, the winners of this year's event. Now, Tony Meppham is in the studio with me, just number crunching through today's footballing results. We will come to that in a couple of minutes' time, but just for the moment, we will be sticking with motorsport. And Nathan Harrison, he says it's an unreal feeling to know he'll be making his TT debut this year. The 23-year-old's last races on Ireland ended in him winning the junior and senior Manx Grand Prix titles in 2019. This week, he's returned to road racing during the Northwest 200, but he managed to take a couple of minutes out of his busy schedule to speak with us at Manx Radio the other day, and Harrison says he's keeping grounded ahead of his maiden TT campaign.
I can't wait. It's been, 3 years since the TT was last run. The feeling that you get riding on a road race was unreal. Having that feeling come back and knowing the TT is just around the corner, because the TT is the ultimate road race, I can't wait.
How excited are you to be involved?
It's my bread and butter, really. It's all I live for. I go to work every day to do the TT. I ride my bike to do the TT, and it's going to be my first TT. So it's a dream come true from being sat on the hedge since the age of I can remember. Trying to get John McGuinness's autograph to be racing with him is an unreal feeling.
It's been a while since we caught up with you, with all that's happened over the past couple of years. What have you been up to?
So I've been keeping busy. I've been working. And then in COVID, thanks to the guys down at Quayside, they took control of the garage with my brother. So it allowed me and my mum and dad to go away and get some critical miles in the UK, because obviously the border restrictions the Isle of Man had, we couldn't travel backwards and forwards as it wouldn't be viable with work. So we spent quite a bit of time in the UK riding the bike, trying to get used to the new 1000. Plenty of time in the gym, and then like you say, all planned for this year, which is the return of the road races, and like you say, put all the effort I can into the TT.
And you know, COVID has had a big effect on racing in general around the world. Has that affected your preparations for this year in any way?
To be honest with you, I would say it's actually helped, as weird as that sounds, as obviously I was coming off the back of the Manx Grand Prix in 2019, winning the junior and senior races, and I'd never ridden a 1000cc bike in my life, obviously only being 23 years old, it's not something I'd been involved with. So going straight to the TT after 2019 to ride a big bike within months, obviously you have the winter break. To be going back to the TT on a big bike that I've not done much mileage on, I was a bit sceptical really. But with the break, as weird as it sounds, I've been able to put a load of time and effort in with all my sponsors and family that's given me the time to put the mileage in on the 1,000. And now I feel really confident going towards TT 2022, whereas I probably wouldn't have felt that before. So now I know I'm going there fully confident with Unreal kit underneath me. And yeah, really looking forward to it.
You were the junior and the senior MGP winner in 2019. How well do you think that experience has prepared you for something like the TT?
Yeah, definitely. Some people go straight to the TT, and then there's other people like myself that want to make sure I'm confident enough and happy enough and get up to speed before going to the TT. And obviously, I chose the route of going from the Manx Grand Prix to the TT. But I feel I always had a thing with my dad that I had to do 120 before I went to the TT. I want to have a long-term career at the TT. But I feel going to the TT after doing 122 mile an hour, it was the last race to be held before COVID. So I feel like it's got my experience up, and I can't wait to obviously put that into play.
What would it mean to you to get a TT win this year?
To be honest with you, I'd obviously always love to win a TT, but with it being my first TT, I'm not even really thinking about winning a TT. I just really want to, I've really got no expectations. Obviously, being a newcomer to the event, I'm just going to be coming with no pressure, enjoying myself, especially around the TT course. The results come on themselves. If you're happy and smooth, you'll be fast. So as much as I'd love to win a TT, that's going to be a long-term goal for me. And I'm not expecting it to happen maybe in the next year or two. But obviously, being Manx and being somebody that's obsessed with the TT, in future, that'll be a big aim in my career.
Manx Radio Sport, driven by Rex Motor Company. Find your dream car by visiting rexmotorcompany.in today, or find us on Facebook.
Nathan Harrison chatting to us on Manx Radio earlier this week, wishing well of the Northwest 200 this weekend. Right, we're now going to turn to Manx football. The spotlight has been heavily on the Prime Plastering Hospital Cup semi-finals today, but also games across the Canada Life Men's Premier League, Division 2 and Combi 2. And joining us right now is Tony Meppam. As ever, Tony, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, Rob.
Okay, we will have, before we go into any further details, we will take a look at the classified football results for today, which are as follows. So, in the Prime Plastering Hospital Cup semi-finals, Corinthians 5, Peel 1, Russian United 4, Union Mills 1. In the Canada Life Men's Premier League, Ayr United 8, Douglas Royal 1, Laxey 0, St George's 3. In Division 2, Governors Athletic 0, Castletown 7. Gyms 0, Gyms and Douglas Athletic, no score as of yet. Maloo versus Foxdale, postponed. St John's 3, Onken 1 is a latest score. And in Combination 2, Colby versus Gyms, postponed. Braddon 4, Castletown 2, and Foxdale versus Onken, postponed. Now, Tony, let's take a look through. We'll start with the Hospital Cup semi-finals. It seems the right place to start things off. And Corinthians 5, Peel 1. Some might have thought this might have been a bit closer than it actually was on the scoreline.
Yeah, I thought it would have been a little bit tighter because, you know, certainly Corinthians, you know, there's a lot of discussions going on about FC Alamann players. But none of them started for Corinthians today. But it was Danny Gerrard who got the leading goal for Corinthians on 37 minutes. And then Luke Murray, who was a second-half substitute, got one on 65. An own goal, another goal by Luke Murray on 87. And Dan Simpson, who was a substitute, scored on 90. And Paul Whitehead it was who got the goal for Peel on 88 minutes. I've had a match report in. It's an honest report, so I'll read it out. Corinthians 5... Peel 1, Paul Whitehead got Peel's goal on 88 minutes. The ball had definitely gone wide of the post for the third goal for Corinthians when Ethan Herbert sliced it in. Corinthians well worth the win by the end of the game, although Peel more than matched them for the first half hour, and there might have been a different outcome if Tom Wood, Andrew Crennel and Lee Gale, all missing for various reasons, had played. So that's only fair, it's an honest reading, and Corinthians go through to the final, which will be played next Friday, so it's the 20th, I think it's 7 o'clock kickoff at the Bowl, and the other team that they're going to be playing is Russian.
Absolutely, coming onto that with perfect timing there, onto the other results, Russian United 4, Union Mills 1.
And it was a goal by young Tyler Hughes, 16 years of age, give Union Mills a lead. And then Furu Davies made it 1-1. Aaron Hawley got the second for Rushen, 2-1. Adam Cool got the fourth, but it was Jack McComarda who got the third one. And I've had a bit of a report in on that one, so it's only fair that we also give that one a mention. Despite the score, Union Mills played well. Lost Leo Fox and Colm Geraghty before the game, which wiped out our midfield. Not an excuse, everyone has injuries. And ended up having to play Jordan Corley, who's been in great form in midfield. Had two or three really good chances before Rushen got their second. Rushen show their class with the last two goals, which were up there amongst goals of the season. Jack Camarda, the second half, was absolutely top draw. And congratulations to young Tyler Hughes, 16 years of age, who got the goal for Union Mills. And the last words of that sort of information is, this lad is going to be massive. So we'll check that one out as he progresses. 16, scored good goals there this season and enjoyed his football. Well done to Union Mills. He did well to get to the semi-final.
Stellar performances there. So it will be Corinthians versus Rushen United in the Prime Plastering Hospital Cup final. And Tony, I know you did mention it just a moment ago, but could you just clarify when and where that'll be?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Saturday the 21st, but because FC Alaman are in the final here on the island, we've moved it to the Friday night to accommodate, and that'll be played at the Bowl, 7 o'clock kickoff. So it's Friday the 20th, and it'll be Corinthians against Rushen.
Very well, and then we move on to the Canada Life Men's Premier League and to the game you covered for Saturday Sport Live today up at Andreas Playing Fields. United, plenty of pomp and ceremony about this, and they've rounded it off in style on home turf, haven't they? Air United 8, Douglas Rawle 1.
They certainly did and played really well, Rob. And first half, it was a little bit tighter than the score shows, but certainly in the second half, they had some good goals. Sean Kelly signing off with a hat-trick. Harry Best got one. George Rawlinson, Dean Tate, Jamie Callister and Harry Weatherall got the other one. Taylor Andrews got the goal for Douglas Rawle. But, absolutely delighted to get that Canada Life trophy in their cabinet, and they'll be looking to try and retain it next season. But, there's a lot of sort of things that can happen since then. But they're going to enjoy tonight. Absolutely fantastic to see them win it for the first time.
Absolutely. Be a different mentality going into next season, being the reigning and defending, won't it possibly? Or do you think, knowing the for example, the players and staff the way you do, they will just go about their business and look to get points on the board each week next season?
Well, I think that's all he can do. You know, there's a lot of talk and, I'm going to speak honest here. You know, Sean Kelly has been absolutely tremendous, and he must be the standout candidate for the Ireland Player of the Year. Now, if there's talk of Sean playing for FC Isle of Man, then, you know, that's a big dent for them. Not only for his goals, but what he brings to the team. But then when you look at George Rawlinson at the back, Jamie Callister as well, they've played really well. And, credit to them. And they've put in a real good hard slog right the way through the season. And they've got that trophy that they wanted. Don't forget, they won the Descartes Railway Cup as well. And also the ECAP FA Cup, Rob. So tremendous. They just missed out on the Hospital Cup, but they were beaten by, I think it was Rushen. One of the finalists in there as well. But everyone will be chuffed to bits down there. There's a lot of hard work done by that committee. They're a great club. They do everything right. And they'll be hoping to retain it with the players that they've got, or even maybe some younger players are coming through. Phil Dunnigan is a young lad who I've noticed this year, who's been in great form, and another good performance by him today.
Treble winners this year. Well, congratulations again to Air United. Absolutely. Men's Premier League champions this year. Okay, let's move on to the other Canada Life Men's Premier League game that took place today, and it finished Laxey 0, St George's 3.
Yeah, and good performance by Geordies. Geordies disappointed last weekend, getting beat in that quarter-final of the Cup. But Steedo with a hat-trick, still scoring plenty of goals. But a bit of a red card for Nathan Cardy. Now, I don't know if that could cost him his place in the final next week. I'm not too sure how the bans work, but no doubt about it, whatever happened today, that could be a big, big loss for FC Isle of Man next week. But, Stephen Priestley will just prove once again how good he is in front of goal.
Absolutely. Let's move on to Division 2, and rather one-sided this one in terms of scoreline, at least. Governors Athletic 0, Castletown 7 over at Colby.
Yeah, I think Castletown went for this one because with Malou and Foxdale not playing today in Div 2, then it's looking good for Castletown to get qualified for that Paul Henry Gold Cup. And once again, he's had a great season too. Alex Crawley on the score sheet, he got two. Danny Lane had a quiet game on Thursday, I've got to be honest, in the Cal Cup. Put it right today, two goals for him. Kyle Watson, Fingal Watson and Ethan Peel were the other goal scorers for Castletown.
Then taking a look, and Jim's versus Douglas Athletic. I wrongly said, this is your handwriting, Tony. I think you have to admit this one. It looked like a seven on the sheet. Jim's and Douglas Athletic, we don't have a score at the moment. Have there been any updates in the last couple of minutes?
That seven's a question mark. No, I haven't had anything through because we've just come in and getting ready for the draw as well. So I have had no score through yet. But, you know, Jim's, if you can, 166-177, please.
Yes, absolutely. Please do keep those scores coming into as well. Maloof versus Foxdale in Division 2, that was postponed. And, well, St John's versus Onken, 3-1 was the latest. That was the last we heard, wasn't it?
5-2 in the end to St John's. So well done to them. Big, big game. The two top teams in the league. It was Barry English got a goal for Onken. It was an own goal as well. Just trying to get St John's scorers. But again, if you can text us through, 166-177. But a cracker result that for St John's.
Absolutely. Let's move on to Combe 2. There were three games penned in. Only one took place today. The two games that were postponed, Colby versus Jim's and Foxdale versus Onken. And the other game did take place, and that finished Braddon 4, Castletown 2.
For Braddon, goal scorers Rhys Lake, Jacob Kenny, he got two goals, and Liam Patton, I think he's the manager now, so well done to him. For Castletown, it was Max Armstrong and Adam Robert who got the other one.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's now time to move on. We have a draw to make in the Ascot Hotel Junior Cup. Okay, so Tony, give us a roundup of what we have in store here for this draw.
Yeah, the Ascot Junior Cup semi-finals it is now, and these games are going to be played next Wednesday. We're going with the Wednesdays, and there's four good teams in the draw, and let's just have a little recap. I won't give you the scores, but just how it went in the quarterfinals. Air beat Onken. Douglas Royal were beaten by Corinthians. Ramsey and Old Boys, that was a real battle, but Old Boys clinched that one. And St John's against Peel, that I think went to extra time, if I remember rightly. Didn't go to penalties. And Peel won it right at the end. Karen Christian with the winner in that one. So you've got the bag there, Rob.
I have indeed.
There's four balls in that bag. And if you can make the draw, please.
Give it a good shake.
Yes,
make sure. Never can be too careful. Okay, and the first number out is number two.
Number two is Corinthians.
And they will play number three.
Number three is Douglas High School Old Boys.
And the next number out is number four.
Number four is a home tie for Peel.
And last but certainly not least, number one.
Number one is Air United. So the two semi-finals for the Ascot Hotel Junior Cup. These games to be played next Wednesday, 6:30 kick-off. First one out of the hat was Corinthians have a home tie against Douglas High School Old Boys, and Peel will play Air.
And just taking a look at those, what particularly stands out of those two four teams, would you say, at this stage?
Well, I think Air have been a bit of a surprise package in this competition, to be honest with you, and they've been scoring plenty of goals. So Air won't be frightened of anybody. I think once Russian came out of this, the two top teams in combination one, and that's where you're usually guided by, which is Peel and Douglas High School Old Boys, they're the two teams that you're looking at. And, you know, Corinthians against Old Boys, Corinthians got a lot of good young players in there, but Old Boys a little bit more experience. But that'll be an interesting tie, and next Wednesday as well, it's going to be a busy week for Corinthians. But Peel against Air United, that sounds like an absolute belter. Peel have got good experienced players in there, and also some good young players, and they'll be looking to see if they can get through to the final against a vastly improving each round Air United, because scored plenty of goals in this competition.
Absolutely, and we have just had a text in, just for clarity. They say, hello, it finished St John's 6, Onken 2.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, taking a look forward, I guess, to next weekend a little bit. Tickets went on sale for the FC Isle of Man game against Camelhead in the First Division Challenge Cup final next Saturday, which is at 3 o'clock. And we also had all but confirmation of FC Isle of Man playing in the NWCFL Premier Division next season. The leagues have been sorted. They are still subject to English FA ratification. But it looks like FC Isle of Man, as many predicted, are going to be playing in the NWCFL Premier next season.
And when I looked at in that league and the teams that are in there, Bury, one of them I noticed. I think it was Autosol Motors as well. And, you know, it's incredible to see them promoted. And now it's going to be against, you know, playing against teams that they haven't really played. I know they've played AFC Liverpool, they've played Avro. I think West Isbury and Charlton are in there as well, if I remember rightly. So the rest of them is going to be new journeys. But I think what's going to be nice, Rob, and I know we found it tough going, is it'll be home and away, hopefully, now. Like last season, the first half of the season was near enough all away, wasn't it? And then the second half was all at home. So this makes it just a little bit easier to cover the games. But incredible. And what a final that's going to be next Saturday. I know there's one or two players missing for FC Isle of Man. I won't name them, but unfortunately they've booked to go away, so they'll be missing, but still a very, very strong squad there, and also players can come in.
Absolutely a great event to look forward to, no doubt, for both sides.
Yep.
Should be a very good occasion. Well, Tony, we'll come back to you possibly a little later on, but we will hopefully now be turning to rugby. It is the Ravenscroft finals day over at Morag Park in Ramsey. The Ravenscroft Manx Plate and Ravenscroft Manx Cup have been up for grabs. We already have one result from the earlier start at 1:45. It finished in the Ravenscroft Manx Plate. Ramsey B 25, Emerging Nomads 32. So Emerging Nomads coming away with the Ravenscroft Manx Plate this afternoon. Well, we can hopefully now cross over to Dave Christian back at Morag Park, where the Ravenscroft Manx Cup final between Ramsey and Vagabonds has been taking place. Dave, hopefully we can get hold of you. Very good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Rob. The game is actually still taking place. It finished 26-26 after 80 minutes. We're now into extra time. Ramsey have just scored in the second minute of extra time. Fintan Cummins with a try down the left wing, and he's now just lining up to take a conversion kick. Somewhere I can see him amongst all the sea of people in front of me. He's up, strikes a ball, that goes wide on the left, so the conversion's missed. So Ramsey 5 points ahead now, 31-26. They started off at a fast and furious pace, 12-0 up inside the first 10 minutes. But Vagabonds hit back. Those early tries from Ramsey, one from Dan Richmond, and the other from right wing Danny Howard. Dan Bomwick also went in for Ramsey, but Luke Purdy hit back for Vagabonds. And at half time, Ramsey were 19-5 in front and seemingly coasting. But in the second half, Vagabonds have put an amazing performance together here. Really dug in and picked up a try from Hope Chirengwa earlier in the second half. Dan Bomwick attempted a clearance kick. Chirengwa caught on the full and he managed to burst through to score. Lucas Simmons added the conversion that made it 19-12. Ramsey earned the penalty try at the other end. That made it 26-12. But then Vagabonds hit back in the last 15 minutes. Ross McCulloch went in the first one on the 64th minute, and right on the final play of the game, Ramsey under a lot of pressure inside their own 22, and Vagabonds turned to get the penalty try this time, and that levelled the scores at 26 apiece. And we're now in uncharted territory here. We don't see extra time very often in Isle of Man rugby. It goes 10 minutes each way, and then we have a kicking competition, a penalty kicking competition, if it's a draw after that. But I don't think we'll be getting there. These two teams have been going out at hammer and tongs. Players are starting to get tired, and I think what we'll see is gaps will start to open up, and Fintan Cummins combining there on the left wing here with Kieran Neal has just seen the first gap emerge and cracks appearing in the Vagabonds' defence. But that game's to come. The earlier one, Emerging Nomads looked to have had it wrapped up. They were 32-10 ahead, and then Ramsey had a big fight back in the last few minutes and only lost by 7 points. And in amongst those Emerging Nomads tries, we had an interception where Harry Brereton ran 80 metres to score, and then Ramsey gave them a gift in their inside their own 22. But Vagabonds now make the break, and that's Ross McCulloch, I think, again for his second down the left wing, and that's put the cat among the pigeons now, because it's 31-31 with 5 minutes gone of the first period of extra time. So this cup final really hotting up. But in that earlier game, as I was saying, Emerging Nomads really got themselves right in front of it. Looked like they were coasting to victory, and late Ramsey fight back. There were two tries in there from Dale Ratliff, and there was a try in there from Ewan Harmer as well that got Ramsey back into it. And they'll be ruining some of those mistakes, I think, Ramsey B. The I wouldn't say they outplayed Emerging Nomads at all, but Emerging Nomads took their chances well, they earned them well, and they were deserved winners, but a lot of Ramsey errors in that. Now, here's Lucas Simmons lining up his conversion to put Vagabonds in front for the first time in this game. He's out wide on the left-hand side. He's about 22 metres out from the line. And it's not an easy kick by any stretch, but it's into the slight breeze we've got here at the Merrick Park as well. But Simmons is up. He strikes the ball. It's got a good shape to it, but it is wide on the left-hand side of the upright. So that does leave it 31-31 with... well, just over 4 minutes to play now in the first period of extra time, and it really is turning into a nail biter. And we never expected to see a Manx Cup go to extra time, Rob, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully we'll catch up with you in a couple of minutes' time. It really does, as you say, sound like it's on a knife edge over at Morag Park this afternoon. Hopefully we can come back to you in just a few minutes' time. Many thanks to Dave there. Well, it's also been a fantastically entertaining day over at the National Sports Centre. It's been day two of the Europe Netball Open Challenge being hosted on the Isle of Man. And let's have a quick look through some of the results that we've already had today from the competition. In the first game of the day, it finished Cayman Islands 45, Israel 21, Switzerland 34, Malta 57, Isle of Man 32, Republic of Ireland 43, and Gibraltar 38, United Arab Emirates 58. And live now is Israel versus Switzerland. We can pass over live now to the National Sports Centre to Kiri Kermode, who's been keeping us very much up to date in the last couple of hours or so. Kiri, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Rob. Well, we're just in the halftime break here now between Switzerland Israel, and it has been really, really close this match, with the first quarter drawing 8-all and now 19-15. Israel just taking the lead there slightly. It's all to play for. They've been some fantastic netball. The Isle of Man there really did put on a great performance and just pipped there in the sort of last half of their game against the Republic of Ireland. Just the experience, I think, from Ireland just pulled them through. We've got a great little team, and wish them all the luck in the world tomorrow as they go in against Gibraltar for the third and fourth playoffs.
As you've been mentioning as well this afternoon, the atmosphere is absolutely fantastic down there, isn't it? All throughout the day.
It really has been fantastic. It's been sellouts for the Isle of Man games, as you'd expect, but also the cheering and support for the other teams that are in the Isle of Man has been phenomenal. We've had Switzerland in the crowd with all of their cowbells. We've had air horns, and the young primary school children have come in and just wanted to show the support for everyone and anyone. And you can probably hear all the shouting now as Israel and Switzerland come back onto the court. It's just been a phenomenal event and a great, great opportunity for the Isle of Man to host something so big, to have eight countries travel to the island, and us, a small place as we are, to put on such a show, all voluntary. It's just been absolutely fantastic.
Well, let's just take a look then at that Manx-Rams game earlier today against Republic of Ireland. You said it yourself there, experience a key factor there. Republic of Ireland running out 43-32 winners. But it wasn't straightforward for the Republic of Ireland, was it? The Manx-Rams put in an absolutely valiant effort.
They really did. They held them so strongly in the first half. And they were fighting for every ball. And quite a lot of the time in netball, it can be luck of the draw. You both go up simultaneously to receive a pass, and it can be tipped either way. Just a little bit of trauma in around the goal shooting area. There was just an odd shot missed on every single goal count at this level. And that's sort of where it ran away a little bit in the second half. But the Isle of Man don't really... Well, in the last 4 years, Rob, this is something that's really grown Isle of Man netball, and it's come to this level so quickly that the experience that these other sides have had for years and decades, the Isle of Man hasn't had. So these girls have gone into it in quantity and just given it their all, and they'll only improve with experience and more matches.
Absolutely. And just looking ahead to tomorrow, Sunday the 15th of May, the three final games of the tournament. At 9 a.m. it's Cayman Islands versus Malta. Then at 11 a.m. the Manx Rams back in action fighting for bronze against Gibraltar. And then at 1 p.m. Republic of Ireland and United Arab Emirates will be battling out for gold and silver. looking at that game against Gibraltar, Isle of Man, they suffered a narrow defeat to Gibraltar on the opening day. What do you think the Isle of Man will probably have to do to try and reverse that tomorrow?
Well, they did put up a really strong fight in the first match. And again, it was just some of those missed goals that sort of let them down. And that only comes with experience, repeatedly doing shooting practice. It will be down to whether we can get those goals converted. They're a strong team. They've gone home tonight. They'll put their heads together and they'll come back stronger tomorrow. If things aren't working out, they've got a different formation they can try. They could have beat Gibraltar the other day. We've just got to make sure every goal counts tomorrow. They're a fantastic side and plenty in the tank to come through. It's just whether they hold the nerve and dig in for those last few minutes. But I think the Isle of Man stand a very, very good chance tomorrow to come away with bronze.
Well, I'm sure there'll be plenty out there on the Isle of Man wishing the Manx Rams once again the very best of luck tomorrow. And just one final question before we let you go. You've been covering this all day for us, but you've sort of touched on it yourself as well, and so have Isle of Man Netball ahead of this event and the Netball Europe Under-21s last year. The experience, how valuable is it to come up against opponents like they are this weekend in terms of building the Manx Rams ability and confidence and experience for the future?
It is absolutely essential. I don't think 5-6 years ago they ever thought they'd be competing at this standard, let alone being ranked in the world. The Isle of Man's 23rd in the world. That can only improve. We have so much talent coming through, so much experience to show them how to do it. And like you say, getting more and more matches under their belts against great, great sides like the Republic of Ireland and the United Arab Emirates can only push them on.
Well, Kiri, thank you very much, and thank you very much for giving us comprehensive and up-to-date reports down there at the National Sports Centre today. Very good evening to you.
Thanks, Rob.
Manx Radio Sport, driven by Rex Motor Company. Find your dream car by visiting rexmotorcompany.in today, or find us on Facebook.
Kiri Kermo down at the National Sports Centre there following the Manx Rams and, of course, the other seven nations taking part in the Europe Netball Open Challenge 2022 here on the Isle of Man. OK, well, we will be hoping to head back to Dave Christian in a few moments with another update on that thrilling Ravenscroft Manx Cup final that is going on now into extra time over at Morag Park in Ramsey. But before we do so, we're going to turn to cycling. And Cycling Club Isle of Man announced this week that they will have a team competing in 2022 after so many things have been in the pipeline over the last few months or so. It will be their men's squad who are taking part in 2022. And, of course, they still have that long-term aim of also having a full women's squad. The idea of the club is to give young aspiring riders the chance to take that next step in their cycling careers going forward, maybe to push on for competition in the UK or further beyond, just as examples. Well, I caught up this week with the newly appointed team manager, Conor Davies, former European cyclist, and he told us a little bit about the vision they have going forward.
Massive. As it's been in the pipeline for quite a long time, and it's sort of just filling in a gap, what's been much needed in Isle of Man cycling the last few years.
Cycling Club Isle of Man, one of the main aims, if not the big aim, is to make sure that aspiring cyclists on the Isle of Man can have the opportunity to spread their wings in the sport going forward. Up until now, what would you say have been the biggest obstacles potentially facing these aspiring cyclists in the past that means they haven't been able to take that next leap?
It's definitely been the age group just coming out of what Dot Tilbury does on Tuesday. The last couple of years we have had a junior program in place, but what the island's always needed is something after junior. That's where you really get your chance to do what you want in the sport, and it's your first real experience of actual high level racing in under 23. So that's sort of what we're trying to do, is give the juniors and maybe guys who are still in the under 23 age group to be able to show themselves and try and get their chance at making a career out of it.
Obviously it's a long-term project, but in terms of the things you've spoken about there, in terms of what you're looking to achieve, what are the sort of things that you'll be looking at doing as team manager to try and make that happen to start with, those first steps?
So obviously I'm quite recently out of the sport. I didn't make it to the very top level, but I made it to what the third tier in cycling, where that's UCI Continental, where it's that sort of where we would be aiming to put guys as well. And with my experience racing as under 23 in junior in Europe and across the UK. I've got to know a lot of people and race organisers and built up quite a good network just through myself being looking for teams and in the position what the guys who we're going to bring into the team are going to be in. So I've sort of been there and know what they need to find and who they need to speak to. So it just kind of makes it a little bit easier on them that they know what they want to do if they want to go to Belgium or France and all stay in the UK with me and the guys who are running the team have got a good connection network where if we feel like they've ready to move up in a sport and we can give them the best chance to get into UK teams and hopefully place a few guys at continental level.
Focusing now then on 2022, for the time being it's going to be the men's squad only. What are the sort of preparations that are now being put in for the men's squad looking forward to the rest of the year?
So this year it's been quite busy, obviously getting it off the ground, and there's been a lot of work got put behind it, and we've had some good support from companies in the Isle of Man what have really helped us get off up and running really. And we will be racing in the next 6 weeks off Ireland with a full Manx squad, but we're still going to announce that in the next week or so, and we'll be doing quite a big event in July, I think, what would be really good for the team, what would give us good exposure and get our name out there, because we're doing two. It's looking like we're having a slimmed down calendar this year just because we're still getting things up and going, but we've got two big good national level events what I think people really notice that we're being quite serious but with what we've came out and what we want to do.
And of course, one of the other big objectives of Cycling Club Isle of Man is to have a full women's squad as well going forward. What is the situation with that at the moment? Even if the women's squad isn't available for 2022, what sort of plans are there?
Yes, so we're going to hopefully have exactly the same across both teams. Like, there's not going to be men will get one thing and women will get something else. It will be hopefully the same level of competition, same kit, everything what the men will get, the women will get too. And we've got, over the last couple of years, especially with what Dot's been doing, there's a good group of young female riders coming through. And we've also got some girls at the top level. And in the UK now, we've got two girls what we would possibly look at in the top, both in the top three of the national series at the moment. And then obviously with Dot, I think there's a couple of young girls who are quite high up in their national series at the younger age groups. So I think we could have two quite competitive teams in the UK and give them a good stepping stone to move up into continental or UCI teams.
Looking forward, not just in 2022, but looking ahead, say the next 18 months or so, things can change, of course, between now and that sort of date, but where are you hoping that Cycling Club Isle of Man will be in around 18 months' time?
We would like to have both teams set up. I think we're concentrating on the road cycling aspect of things first, so we can have two teams up and running and competing with our kit and representing our sponsors. And then I think hopefully we will bridge out to other disciplines of cycling, where that will be mountain biking and things like that. So I think we just want to get a good base and have the options there for anyone that wants to pursue a career in cycling or wants to get off the island and see where they fit in the world of cycling, really.
Manx Radio Sport, driven by Rex Motor Company. Find your dream car by visiting rexmotorcompany.in today or find us on Facebook.
Connor Davies there, team manager of Cycling Club Isle of Man, speaking to him earlier this week about the goals and missions of Cycling Club Isle of Man going into the rest of 2022 and beyond. We wish them the very best of luck. Well, it looks like Saturday Sport Classified is going to end on an EastEnders-style cliffhanger at this point, because we're going to go back to Morag Park in Ramsey. It's extra time between Ramsey and Vagabonds in the Ravenscroft Manx Cup final, and hopefully we can get Dave Christian once again at the other end. Dave, where's it going now?
Yep. I think you can hear some noise in the background. We're 5 minutes into the second period of extra time. Daniel Bomwick has just scored for Ramsey, and that gives Ramsey a lead, 36 points to 31. Vagabonds also in a little bit of trouble disciplinary-wise. They've had two yellow cards shown, one for number 8 Nathan Gibson and one for a flanker Mark Oldfield. So that means Vagabonds are going to have to play the last 4 minutes or so of extra time here with 13 men, including missing two men from the back row, which is a bit low for them. It's going to make life very, very difficult. But we've got a conversion to come here yet. Dan Richmond is lining this up to try and push the lead out to 7 points at 38-31. And it is really turning into a real nail-biter here at the Merrick Park. Ramsey comfortably ahead 19-5 at half-time, but a particularly gritty comeback from Vagabonds in the second half. A penalty try in the 79th minute just got them level and forced it into extra time. And then Fintan Cummins scored for Ramsey in the first period of extra time. And Ross McCulloch hit back with his second of the game to level the scores at 31-31. Dan Richmond's conversion just gone wide. So we're going to have a restart now with Vagabonds to kick off to Ramsey. And remember, Vagabonds now down to 13 men. Missing two men from the back row. This is going to be tough for them to come back from. But they came back from a 19-5 half-time deficit, so they're going to have to show a little bit more of that mettle they showed in the beginning of the second half if they're going to get back on level terms here. So Cam Finlay kicks off. That's fielded by John Watling for Ramsey. He finds skipper Matt Meekin. Meekin runs heavily into contact. He's brought to the ground. Ruck forms. Dan Richmond digs that out. Connor Goodall shuffles it off to Ben Hardman in the midfield, the hooker popping up. He's wrestled to the ground and Ramsey retained possession. And Stevie Neal takes this one on. Neal just makes a yard or two. He's brought to the floor again. Richmond digs around at the bottom of that. He finds Rory Nicholson out in midfield. Nicholson manages to make a yard or two before he's put to the floor. Referee Darren Thompson says there's a penalty there. Pull of the shirt off the ball. That's a penalty to Ramsey, and that should be an opportunity for them to clear their lines with just 2 minutes left in this extra time now. And Ramsey lead 36 points to 31. And Fintan Cummins fires that into touch. Ramsey will now have a line out about 10 metres inside the Vagabonds' half. And Matthew Meekin marshals his troops together for one final push. And if they can squeeze a couple of extra points here, even as much as a penalty, it'll just give them a margin, a little bit of margin of breathing space. But it's going to be increasingly difficult for Vagabonds with only 13 men on the field. Those men won't be taking any further part in the game. There's not going to be enough time for them to serve their 10 minutes and get back on. So they know that here. The line-out's thrown. Eddie Lord claims it for Ramsey. And the forwards get around him. They're setting up some ruck ball. And Adam Dunlop picks and goes just at very close range. Just taking it into a body, a pile of players, and that's out to Matthew Meekin now. Meekin's brought to the ground. Ramsey again clear the ruck ball. Richmond pops it out to John Watling. Watling makes a yard, makes 2 yards, makes 3 yards. He's on the floor now. Again, quick ruck ball. Meekin puts that out to Bonwick. Bonwick looks for Stevie Neal in the centres. Neal takes it on. Just a little offload. Bonwick breaks a break. He's round the corner. He's past one man. He's past two. He finds Fintan Cummins. Cummins gallops down the left wing. He's brought to ground. And we've had it was quite a nasty tackle there. Didn't see who it was, but it was a Vagabond on, I think, Fintan Cummins. He was upended and dropped down on his head. So that's going to be some more disciplinary trouble, I think, for Vagabonds. And I suspect The medical team are just going on to make sure the player's okay. If he's dropped on his head or his neck, then everyone wants to make sure he's fine before he gets up. No, it's not Fintan Cummins, I think it's Brandon Atchison. But he was properly upended there. I suspect we're probably going to see a red card here. But the referee's taking his time, making sure the player's okay first. Consulting with his touch judge, Joe Phelan on the far side. Got Rob Martin here, so we've got a full qualified referee panel. And I suspect, looking at my watch now, Rob, we're getting very, very close to the witching hour, 6 o'clock fast approaching. And while this injury's sorted out, may take a moment or two, but the referee still consults with his touch judge. Remember, Ramsey ahead. In the second period of extra time, we've just got 10 minutes elapsed on my watch, but I'm sure there'll be a minute or so to play. And Ramsey ahead, 36-31 now in this extra time period. That Daniel Bonwick try. Vagabonds then picking up 2 yellow cards, so they're down to 13 men already. Referee wants a word with somebody. Looks like Cameron Finlay, I think, from Vagabonds, and the captain as well, Matt Rockwell. Referee Thompson taking time to explain what his decision is, And I think we're only really going to be debating what colour the card is, red or yellow. And referee Darren Thompson, former Vagabond player, but former Ramsey player as well, to be fair. So he's sort of booting both camps, so he's not biased in any way, shape or form. He digs his hand in his pocket. It is a card. It doesn't really matter, I don't think, what colour the card is, because the player won't be taking any further part. And that's Vagabonds down to 12 men now. So Ramsey with a penalty. Cummins kicks that into touch. Ramsey going to be looking for a line out with the final, probably the final play of the game. And it is 36-31, a 5-point lead here for the Manx Cup. Ramsey won it last in 2001, and it's the only time they've won it. So a little bit of a score to settle, perhaps, here at the Mirick Park. Vagabonds, of course, multiple winners over the years in that purple spell they had in the late 80s, early 90s, when everything was Vagabonds in those days. But Ramsey now looking to claim the cup only for the second time. Seconds left. Referee is making the signal that he would like a ball. Not quite sure what happened to the match ball. But no, someone's found it now. I suspect somebody might be trying to run the clock down there. I'm not sure, but if I...
Well, Dave, we're going to stay with you for these last couple of minutes.
Oh, right. Excellent. Thanks, Rob. And the ball is hoofed into touch unceremoniously by Dan Richmond, and that is full time.